Hello there. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM. We actually have Juan Gonzalez on the line right now. Juan Gonzalez is a two-time Polk Award-winning New York Daily News columnist and Democracy Now! Co-host. He has emerged as one of the country's best-known and most respected Latino journalists during a turbulent career spanning more than 35 years. Even before he entered journalism, Gonzalez distinguished himself as a leader of the Young Lords, a militant civil rights organization of the late 1960s, and of the National Congress for Puerto Rican Rights in the 1970s. He's the author of four books. His most recent is News for All the People, The Epic Story of Race and the American Media. Juan?
Yes, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. And I'm glad to be on your station.
Yeah, I'm glad we got you on. It was a work of faith, I think. but you are actually giving a talk tonight in Troy, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, that will be live streaming starting at 7 o'clock. Are you excited?
Yes, I'm looking forward to it. It's this is my first visit to Troy. I've been to Albany several times, but never made the jump over to Troy. So it's and I'm looking forward to meeting some of the social activists and the community leaders that'll be here this evening.
Yeah. So the talk is around your new book, News for All the People: The Epic Story of Race in the American Media. Would you like talking about your book for a little bit?
Yeah. Well, it's basically sort of I've been working on it with my co-author Joe Torres for the last 8 years, and it's basically an attempt to try to make sense of the news media in America, which so many ordinary Americans have problems with, frustrations with, anger about, what they see as the failings, the failures of the news media, and we attempted to try to look at the construction of the system. How did it occur? Why did our media companies develop the way they did? And so we actually go back to the very early days, actually starting in colonial times up to the present, trying to look at what were the policies, what were the debates that occurred, how did that affect the kinds of news coverage that the American people received. So that's one big part of it. The other big part of it is we look at how race and ethnicity have been dealt with by the media, again, from the very beginning, from colonial times to the currently, to the days of the internet, and the interplay between mass communications, technology, government policy, and racial conflict in America, and how the news media have actually played a primary role in creating a white racial narrative throughout American history. Not just distorting the news, but actually being prime creators of the myths and stereotypes that then create so much conflict instead of understanding between the races and the various ethnic groups in America. So that's the basic two thrusts of the book. How did the system itself get built and come to where it is today? And how did people's struggles and popular struggles affect that system? And also, how has the issue of race and racial conflict been either made better or worse by news coverage?
Wow, that's a really hefty topic. I feel like as a minority that works in media, I find it really interesting. And I was wondering how your work around your book has informed your work on Democracy Now!
Well, I think it's probably the other way around. My work on Democracy Now! Really has also given me better insights into the underpinnings of the system, because one of the things that we began to grasp as we delved into the various archives and old newspapers and radio shows of the past is that there's always been a dissident or alternative strain in the American news media, going back from the days of the Working Men's Press in the 1830s through the various progressive muckrakers of the late 1800s and early 1900s, through the New Left Press of the of the 1960s and 70s through the progressive bloggers and in the media centers of our time, that there's always been sort of a separate, alternative, non-commercial, dissident, rebel press in America, and Democracy Now! And community radio are part of that grand tradition, and it's a separate wing of the American press that's very different from the commercial or for-profit press, but it gets ignored in terms of its historical role of raising issues that the mainstream or the corporate media failed to raise or failed to cover adequately. So that's one of the things that we've tried to do, link what's going on today with the historical trends within American society in how the news gets delivered to the people.
Wow. How does your personal history, can you tell us a little bit about your personal history and how you ended up as a journalist?
I was born in Puerto Rico, but came to the United States when my parents migrated from Puerto Rico after World War II, and it was a high school journalism teacher who really first got me interested, inspired to enter journalism, and she selected me to be the editor of my high school newspaper in Brooklyn, New York, and so from then I went on to on an academic scholarship to Columbia University, and there again working on the school paper, so that I've always been interested in journalism. But once I got to Columbia, I was sort of waylaid, but gravitated toward the student anti-war movement in the late 1960s and early 70s, and so sort of left journalism behind for about a decade until I went back to it later on in the late 1970s, and I've been a professional journalist now for the past 35 years. So I've always had an interest in journalism and the responsibility of those who get an opportunity to report the news, not just to regurgitate garbage or to deal with shallow news reporting, but to attempt to really get behind the story, to explain to readers the why and the how of the events that are happening, and also to provide an opportunity for diverse voices to be expressed through your writing or your editing of audio or video, that you really do have a responsibility as a journalist to, especially in a democracy, to provide the readers who will be voters and who will be active citizens the best possible explanation of the nuances of an event so that they can perform their responsibilities as citizens based on the information and news that they receive from you and from other journalists.
All right. So how do you navigate through objectivity and personal politics when you put together your stories with your strong political background?
Well, I mean, clearly one of the things that most people who enter journalism have to deal with this this question that you're always being told, especially in the commercial and the corporate media, that you have to be objective. Now, this, of course, is not the way the news media in the United States have always been. This is really the theory of objectivity in news is really arose about the mid-1900s and for about the last 100 years, because in the early years of the United States, newspapers were outrageously partisan. In fact, one of the things that we show in our book is the key role that the colonial printers had in fomenting the American Revolution. And in fact, they played a critical role in arousing the population against British colonial rule, and were celebrated for that role that they played. And throughout the early 1900s into the mid 1900s, basically almost all news media in the United States had identifiable political viewpoints. It was only when gradually advertising became the dominant source of revenue for newspapers in the late 1900s and the beginning of the 20th century that advertisers began to press the owners of newspapers to try to represent the entire community because the advertisers wanted to sell to the entire market. So gradually the theory of objectivity arose in a news reporting more as a justification for advertisers to be able to not alienate any potential buyers of their products. Of course, that's now, we see there's been a swing back through the development of talk radio and, of course, now of talk TV, that once again you're seeing fiercely sort of partisan approaches to news occurring on the cable channels and on the talk radio shows. So this theory of objectivity was actually a period of time in American journalism that it was the dominant theory. However, what's the reality? The reality is that every person, every journalist is necessarily subjective in the way they approach reality, because you can only look at reality through your own eyes, and your eyes are conditioned by where you were born, what your class, your religion, the influence of your parents, the influence of a particular school that you went to. All of that shapes how you view reality. So everyone's view of reality and news events is necessarily subjective. However, you try as best as possible to provide as complete a picture of that reality as you can. And hopefully, when your perspective is put up against the perspective of other journalists or other writers, then the reader or the viewer or the listener has an opportunity to make up their mind from the divergent viewpoints. So it's not a question of whether you're going to be subjective or objective in reporting the news. How faithful are you to attempt to do as best possible a job as you can, given the limitations that your viewpoint is necessarily going to be subjective? The reality is that a white American reporter or a Native American reporter or a African American reporter, when it comes to dealing with racial conflicts, won't see things necessarily the same ways because their experiences might be dramatically different. That doesn't mean that one is trying to be fair or unfair to what the subject that they're covering. It's just that they have different sets of eyes to see the same reality.
Yeah, I think you're completely right about that. And when you were talking about the theory of objectivity, you mentioned talk radio and talk shows. And I was thinking about cable networks now and how, and also with the internet, people go on specific websites and the advertising is geared towards one like niche market and their content's geared towards specific people. But I think now with the internet, people kind of suss out the information they want to, be it normally probably like more one-sided than it necessarily would have been in other markets. Like with the internet, like Huffington Post is very liberal and everyone knows that, and Drudge Report that people go on is super conservative. So I think it's...
Right, and the people who go to Drudge Report rarely read Huffington Post.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're having sort of a return now with the internet as well as with cable television and talk radio to the earlier years of the American media. But guess what happens? Once the technological revolution shakes itself out and if certain companies begin to dominate media the way they did in the monopoly days of newspapers or the network days of television and radio, you may find a return to this theory of objectivity because a new set of advertisers or commercial interests may want to once again reunite the people, or reunite the market, not the people, with definitely. More homogenized viewpoints.
Oh, yeah, I definitely see that coming, unfortunately, closer in my mind. I see the internet and especially media and how it's, and advertising in that relationship becoming more and more dominated by very specific companies. So it is going to be very, because for a while I remember, you know, my friends and I, we'd listen to Democracy Now! And watch Democracy Now! On your website. That's how we would get our information because we had no other tools. We didn't have a TV and we couldn't find anything leaning towards the like news we wanted to find on the radio. But now I find that, and we would, you would be able to find other news sources that you necessarily wouldn't be able to get anywhere else on the internet. And I see that kind of these bigger media outlets kind of monopolizing information, and it's, you know, from lesser sites. So that is a very, like, it would be really interesting to see how that plays out.
Well, and of course now you have this situation where this progressives help to build up Huffington Post, and then the Huffington Post sells itself to AOL.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
Yeah, exactly.
What will be the impact of that on the kind of coverage that develops in Huffington Post, or the fact that CNBC has developed sort of as a moderate liberal Democratic Party supporting talk network. But the reality now is that NBC is giving to both parties, because NBC has a CNBC for conservative Republicans, and it's got MSNBC for Democrats, the moderate and liberal Democrats. So just as the giant companies give donations to both parties, NBC now is making money off of the viewers on both sides of the equation politically by having two separate cable channels that geared to each of those groups. So to what degree will that have an impact on the kinds of coverage that...
In the long run, which network would win out to have, like, the singular voice? And it's funny, like, it'd be interesting to know kind of, like, the conflicts, because I feel like those two networks do have conflicts with each other just because of what their platform is and the information that they're giving out is. So, I mean, for me, it's like I see the internet as the last frontier for media.
Right, and we get into, in the book, the challenges facing those who would seek to preserve and expand democracy through utilizing the internet as a means of providing more diverse news and information. Because one of the things that we discovered is that the development of every new communications technology subverts the existing order, because technology by its nature is revolutionary and unsettling of the status quo. But then every time that new communications technology develops, the government has to step in to determine the new rules of the playing field. And it happened when the telegraph was first developed. It happened when early radio came about. It happened when cable TV came about. And it's now happening again with the internet. The new technology upsets the existing order and requires the government to step in and develop new policies for how news and information will flow in a democracy. And that's the era that we're in now. Huge major decisions being made in Congress and at the Federal Communications Commission over how news and information will flow. And unfortunately, the legacy, the old media that are battling to survive one way or another or to transform themselves into new media companies don't really want to inform the public too much about what these debates are, because they'd rather settle them all between themselves, their lobbyists, and the members of Congress and the staff of the commissioners of the FCC, and they don't really want a public debate on a lot of these issues. So, you know, the future of community radio or public access, or the future of net neutrality on the net, and the question of continued service. that all of these things are being debated and decided in one way or another by federal lawmakers, and the public has little knowledge of what's actually going on.
Yeah. I mean, in my you were mentioning radio, and maybe it's because WGXC is a very new station. We've been on air for a year now, after years of a lot of hard work for many people in the community of Greene and Columbia County. But I kind of see like a nice hope, kind of maybe a pushback just of like the new trend, or not new trend, but like the trend of community radio stations coming on air and people really gaining control of their local media and wanting to invest in that and giving really like a clear and honest and open voice for people everywhere in their community. So maybe it'll become more a localized thing. I see that happening with a lot of things, but I could be wrong.
Well, no, but that's one of the points that we make in the book is, and that every time there's a huge spurt in a new technological development and the government steps in to try to rewrite the rules, the fundamental question that has been debated over and over again throughout American history is democracy best served by a local and autonomous media system, or is it best served by a centralized and nationally run media system? And this, the same debate was occurred in the days of early radio, when in the early 1900s and 1920s you had thousands of amateur radio operators, you know, ham radio operators built their own sets, started broadcasting, and you had a rich diversity of viewpoints, and African Americans were on the air, Latinos were on the air, and many, many young people, church groups, local governments, cities had their own radio stations. The Chicago Federation of Labor had its own radio station in Chicago, WCFL. You had this enormous diversity of voices. But then the government stepped in because there was a lot of interference in the ether, and they developed the Federal Radio Act of 1927, followed by the Federal Communications Act of 1934, to regulate and apportion frequencies. The result was that they ended up kicking off the air most of the non-commercial, educational, minority radio operators and handing the best frequencies over to a couple of newly developing commercial networks called NBC and CBS. And so the government actually, through the Federal Radio Act of 1927 and the Federal Communications Act, centralized radio broadcasting in a few powerful hands, and you had the growth of the networks. So those were political decisions made by our leaders, and which actually set back the ability of people to be heard and have their local perspectives and their local news properly covered. So, you know, it happens time and again when a new technology develops that you've got to redo the information system. You don't redo it completely because the old legacy systems are still there, but you have to sort of redo the laws that govern them. And that's why it's so important for people to pay attention to media policy. They've got to pay attention to educational policy or labor policy or tax policy or other things that affect them, but they also have to pay attention to media policy, because it really is about how the citizens of a democracy will be informed.
Oh, wow. I was thinking about that debate. Should it be local or national? And I want to be like, yeah, like local, like it should all be, I don't know. Like, that's scary thought, if like it has to be one or the other. I do think that there is room for both, like national coverage on radio and besides radio, and also a local, more local standpoint on media and what's going on.
Oh, yeah, no, you do need national broadcast, but the issue is really because there is a national market, there will always be national networks. There'll be a few major newspapers that really are the ones that provide the most relied on news. But the issue of a democracy really is, who's going to cover your local school board meeting? Who's going to tell you what is happening in your community? The commercial networks will always find enough money to hire enough reporters to tell you what's going on internationally or nationally with the White House and the Senate races. But when you have a local race for state legislator or state senator or for your school board, what media is going to provide debates or clarify the issues between the people who are running? Who's going to cover the situations of the roads that don't get paved properly on one side of the city while on the other side of the city they're in terrific shape? Who's going to cover what's happening in the local schools? So all this focus on the presidential race in political coverage doesn't do anything to help voters understand the rest of the races that they will all have to vote for, whether it's city council or school board or the budget battles in their local communities. So that's why you will have a national body being paid a decent salary to report the local news.
I know how that one is. Well, yeah, I do have to say this is I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and I've never been informed about really what was going on locally, like local politics in my neighborhoods that I lived in, until, especially someone who's always kind of had a little fascination with politics in general, until I moved to Hudson. And through, you were talking about like who would do all these things, I kept thinking about WGXC and this radio station, how personally it's actually informed me so much. It's the first time I've ever actually been so informed locally about the issues that are happening in my community and the politics that are going on, that actually makes me feel like I do vote. And when I do vote, I am making a difference because I'm informed. So right. It is really interesting to see if like that more of those dynamics can come out, hopefully.
Yeah, and that's why stations like yours are so important, and why, not only that, but that there should be competing stations, and enough so that people can have different perspectives and different viewpoints, and there's no reason why we can't have much more local media than we do today, except that we've got to come up with a different model of sustaining the reporters, not an advertiser-driven model, which is how the commercial media and the corporate media have existed now from pretty much from the mid-19th century till the end of the 20th century. That's been the advertising has represented two-thirds of the income of newspapers and about 90% or so the income of radio and television stations. And if the internet follows the same route of depending largely on advertising to bring in the revenues, it will face the news sites that depend on advertising will face the same problems that the commercial press faced in its mature period of time, and it's the commercial newspapers, radio, and television. So we've got to start thinking, and Robert McChesney has talked a lot about this, others have talked about this, new models for sustaining public interest journalism in the 21st century, and especially in the digital era.
Wow, that was a lot of food for thought, and I'm sure you have way more in you tonight at the Sanctuary for Independent Media. We actually have to put on Al Jazeera English now, but thank you so much for taking time out and talking to us today. And
it's my pleasure, and I hope that everyone continues to listen to and support WGXE.
All right, I'm going to clip that out and use it for our next pledge drive. All right, thank you so much.
Okay.
Have a nice day. All right, so that was Juan Gonzalez. We're actually going to be live streaming his talk about his new book, News for All People, The Epic Story of Race and the American Media. It's going to be at the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy. And you can tune in here, WGXC 90.7 FM, to hear that talk or stream online at 90.7 FM. And that was the afternoon show, and have a nice day.